MediTalk with Dr. Ross Walker.
Okay, it's that time of the week where we stop down and talk all things medicine with Dr. Ross Walker. And a quick reminder that if you've got any questions you'd like me to put to the good doctor, all you have to do is simply send me an email. You go to the 2SM website and you click on the link, or you can send it to our local website here, which is brent@2ht.com.au. And you send those questions in and I'll send them on to Dr. Ross and he'll answer the questions for you. Let's say good afternoon to Dr. Ross Walker. Hello, Ross.
How are you, mate?
I'm okay, mate. I trust you're well and fit and well?
Extremely so.
You've just had a break, so lucky you. I imagine you're still having a break over Christmas, are you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I always take a month off the media over Christmas and take some time off work. I think everyone needs to recharge. And I have some people say to me, almost as a badge of honour, they go, "Doc, I haven't had a holiday for 10 years. I go, "Well, you're an idiot." So we all need time off. We all need to have a break. We all need time off during the week. People who say, "I work a 12 to 14 hour day," I'm sorry, but that's just not sensible.
There'd be people out there that are saying, "Yeah, but that's all right for you to say that."
Well, I understand that, but we still need to have time off. The point is you burn yourself out very easily, and you've got to look at the structure of your life. I think it's very important.
Yeah, I agree. Normally, I imagine, would you go overseas and have a holiday with your lovely wife?
Not at Christmas time. We've got a huge family. I've got 5 children, 8 grandchildren, so we spend time. We always have a family Christmas at home.
Right.
But I like to go overseas during the year and just go up to Byron, which we're doing in January again.
Again?
Yeah. Oh, we love Byron. We're serial offenders in Byron.
Half your luck. All right, let's get stuck into it. Today we're talking about, now, is it glioblastoma? Have I pronounced it right?
You have pronounced it absolutely correctly, and it's obviously a deadly brain cancer, and it's not that common, thankfully, but it's also not that well treated up to this point.
Okay.
And there are 4 things I'd like to discuss about the new breakthroughs in the management of glioblastoma. Firstly, and this came out a couple of years ago, it came out of Duke University, and this just shows you the marvels of modern medical science, which we're seeing so much with the vaccines for the coronavirus and everything else we speak about all the time. But these people, I don't even know how they thought of this, but the old polio virus is a nerve killer, and people who got polio when you and I were kids had dreadful disabilities and paralysis, etc. But what this guy also realized, a guy called Professor Matthias Gromeo from Duke University, he realized that polio also loved cancer cells. So he created this, what we call chimera, which is where you combine 2 things to become something new, a poliovirus and a rhinovirus. The rhinovirus causes 2/3 of the common cold. In fact, a weak coronavirus causes the other 1/3 of the common cold. So this poliorhinovirus chimera was modified to express parts of the tumor antigen that you get with glioblastomas and then induced an immune response. So basically what he did was infuse this poliovirus, this altered poliovirus, directly into the tumors of people who had end-stage glioblastoma, and it basically got the immune system to go into the cancer cells but to leave the normal cells alone, and he's actually reversed the disease in a small number of people. So he's going to go to a bigger clinical trial to see whether this is viable treatment. So instead of having major brain surgery, what they might do is remove a bulk of the tumor, then just infuse it with this chimeric poliovirus, which is quite extraordinary. So that's number one. Number two, some work out of the University of Calgary, and they did 2 things. One, there's a chemical called interleukin-33, which is part of the immune system. And here's the interesting thing. One of the reasons why glioblastoma is so difficult to treat is they secrete this interleukin-33 that attracts immune cells to the glioblastoma, then it stops them from functioning. So it's almost like the Stockholm syndrome. So it captures the immune cells, but then it makes the immune cells come on board with the glioblastoma, which makes the tumor grow more. Because, as you know, all living organisms, all they want to do is survive, including cancers. So what they've done is they've blocked this interleukin-33 in people with glioblastoma, and the tumors regressed in mice, markedly improving their survival time. And the same people did a similar experiment on mice who were predisposed to glioblastoma, who developed the thing, and gave them vitamin B3. You and I have spoken about niacin and its different forms over the years. And when they added the vitamin B3 to the chemotherapy for the glioblastoma, they tripled the survival rate in mice from 40 days to 150 days. And then finally, and I've got to always declare that I have a strong interest in this area, I'm on the board of a company called MGC Pharmaceuticals, who are developing medical cannabis all throughout the world. And we've just released some results on our medical cannabis trial we did in, this is just a line of cells, glioma cells, and we actually markedly reduced the growth of the glioma cells by using medical cannabis. So there's four things. There's the poliovirus, the interleukin-33 effect, the vitamin B3, and potentially medical cannabis for the treatment of glioblastoma.
Now, this glioblastoma is what, sadly one of the deadliest brain cancers you can get, and the percentage rates of survival are very, very, very low, aren't they?
Dismal. Yeah. Probably a 10%, 10% 5-year survival, and the vast majority of people aren't with us after about 12 months. So, but what I'm saying is there are all these breakthroughs that really aren't that far away.
Which is good. Tell me about this vaccine that shows promise against the herpes virus.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. They vaccinated, now this has only been done in animals, they vaccinated guinea pigs with a modified live virus. Now, when you think about herpes, the commonest manifestation of herpes is just a cold sore. So if people who get recurrent cold sores, they have a chronic herpes simplex 1 infection that just recurs if they get too much sun in it or wind or they're under stress. Then there's the second most common form of herpes, which is genital herpes, and that's the herpes simplex 2 virus. But what they did was they altered this herpes simplex 1 virus to make it still a live virus. So they modified it and injected it or vaccinated these guinea pigs who had genital herpes, and they markedly reduced the genital lesions that the guinea pigs had, the much less viral replication, much less viral shedding. So now, of course, they're moving towards human trials, because if we could have a vaccination against herpes, both cold sores and genital herpes, it would be wonderful, because there's our old joke, a dreadful joke, what's the difference between love and herpes? Herpes is forever. So hopefully we'll be able to dong the herpes on the head.
What's the difference between what, love and herpes?
Love and herpes. Herpes is forever.
Dear me. I love the fact that you always can take a joke on the side. Talk to me about red meat, because most blokes my age would eat and have eaten for a long time a fair bit of red meat. And there's now a link, red meat linked to cancer.
Well, this is the point. You see, we've been told for so long that red meat can cause cancer. But there's never been a really good explanation. Some people say it's really the char-grilled meat where you liberate all these things called nitrosamines, nitrites and nitrates. And there's possibly some link there. There's probably no link between the saturated fat in meat and cancer. But what they've done is they found this particular thing called, and I'll only say it once because it's hard to pronounce, N-glycolyl neuronimic acid. So let's just call it U5GC or N5GC,
right.
And they found that some people had much higher levels of this N5GC when they consumed things, like, especially red meat. There's low levels in fish, but it's not in poultry, which is one of the reasons why many dietitians tell you to have white meat rather than red meat. Now, humans can't synthesize this N5GC, so you only get it when you consume things like red meat. And they found that in certain people, and this is the point, if you have a diet that's high in a lot of processed meats, especially, which have a lot of this stuff in it, you increase your risk for bowel cancer probably about 17%. But let's put that in realistic terms for those of us who do enjoy the occasional bit of red meat. That takes your bowel cancer risk from 6 per 100 people per lifetime to 7 per 100 people per lifetime. So we're not talking about a huge risk here. But what they're saying is those people have the highest levels of this N5GC and also get antibodies to this N5GC. So especially those with the highest antibodies levels tend to have the highest rates of bowel cancer. So they did a survey of just over 16,000 adults and looked at their dietary records and looked at all these links and found that there was a relationship between high consumption of red meat and certain cheeses and these N5GC and their antibodies, but didn't actually link that directly to bowel cancer just said that in experimental animals, there was a much higher rate of bowel cancer in those with the highest levels. So there's a few steps to get there, but we're getting closer to understanding why potentially having red meat all the time could cause you an issue. But look, I say to people, if you had red meat once a week, it's not going to kill you and it's not a big issue. But I just wouldn't be having it every day, and I certainly wouldn't be having processed meats every day, because a lot of the studies have shown, just taking cancer aside of it, just get back to my specialty for a second, that if you have some form of processed meats every day, you do increase your risk for cardiovascular disease by 40%, but there's no link between having natural red meats every day and cardiovascular disease.
Okay. Just Neville sent me an email as a result of your herpes story. He said, is jock itch a type of herpes?
No.
It's not.
It's a different thing whatsoever. That is more related to a fungal infection,
right,
rather than the herpes is an incredibly painful genital lesion. So you get little ulcers around the genital region, and it's incredibly painful, as opposed to just the itch, which is a different thing altogether.
He said, what's wrong with me if I continually get jock itch? He seems to be a bike rider. He said, what's wrong with me if I continually get jock itch?
Well, he probably has a chronic fungal infection, some form of tinea, and he needs to get treatment.
Okay, there you go. We're going to take a break with our chat with Dr. Ross. We'll come back and we'll talk all things COVID next. We're talking to Dr. Ross Walker. He has his weekly myth, and this week the myth is stress is basically an emotional reaction to a traumatic event or conflict.
Yeah, well, look, stress is actually defined as a great pressure or strain. And I talk about the five categories of stress. So it's not just an emotional thing. People just think, oh, you're stressed out of your brain because you're emotional. That's rubbish. Stress can be emotional. So, for example, within 2 hours of getting acutely angry with anyone or acutely anxious about something, you increase your risk for a heart attack by 8 times. So that form of emotional stress can be very, very bad for your body. That wonderful Buddhist saying, you're not punished for your anger, you're punished by your anger. But also there's mental stress. So they did a study called the Whitehall Study where they looked at thousands of British civil servants and followed them for about 20 years. And they found that those who suffered job strain, which is defined as high demand, low control. So we're talking about the middle managers, not the bosses. They were the ones who had much more stress, much more cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure. But then there's physical stress. And I'm not just talking about the physical stress of excessive exercise. I'm talking about the fat guy that runs for the bus, or I'm talking about the physical stress of pain or an operation, or these fools that climb Mount Everest who have a 25% mortality rate, by the way. It's not just the heavy climb, but it's the freezing cold temperatures, and it's also the extremes of oxygen as well. They get very low oxygen. So that sort of stress can bring on any sort of heart disease or any other serious illness. Then there's pharmacologic stress, legal or illegal. So, for example, I had a 35-year-old guy who had 3 double-shot cappuccinos in the space of an hour, set his heart into overdrive. I had a fellow in his 30s, went out one night in a Bucks night, had a few lines of coke, had a major heart attack by doing that. You might drink a certain amount of alcohol one night, go out and have a huge amount. That can cause a heart attack, cause you to go into atrial fibrillation, cause all sorts of issues. And finally, in the era of our modern pandemic, any infective stress, you can be going along fine, then you get COVID, have a heart attack as a consequence of that, go into fibrillation, myocarditis, you can get influenza, pneumonia. So stress isn't, people think about stress, they just think, oh, it's just emotional. No, it's not. There's much more to do with stress, and stress has a very adverse effect on your immune system.
But a lot of people have to deal with stress emotionally. And, I mean, have you got any tips for people that may be suffering some stress? They might be experiencing some tough times in their life at the moment, and it's stressing them. And they wake up of a morning and they feel bad. They go to bed of a night time and they feel bad. They lie in bed awake of a night time and they feel bad because of what's happening in their life. What sort of advice can you give people to get rid of
it? Firstly, let me say that it's very easy to, when your life's going along well, to say, oh, look, stress is not that big a deal. And I think, firstly, when people are experiencing something horrible in their life, and many people are, you've got to allow that to go through the system. I'll tell you a story. I had this beautiful man who was actually a minister of religion, and he was always this lovely, happy, ebullient fellow. And he came in one day, and he looked shocking. And I said to him, Les, what's the problem, mate? You look dreadful. He said, oh, Ross, my wife died a month ago, he said, and I just feel horrible. And he said, for the last 30 years, I've been dealing out these pathetic platitudes to people about the love of God and how God will see you through all this. And I realize how shallow it is when you're on the other side, when people are saying the same thing to you.
Right.
And I said, Les, you've just been through the worst stress anyone could go through. You should feel bad. Anyhow, he came back about 6 weeks later with a big smile on his face. And I said, hang on, 6 weeks ago, you were looking, why are you looking so happy? And he said, when you told me I was allowed to feel bad, I felt bad and I got better.
Right.
So what I'm saying is when you have stress, you can't just dismiss it and feel like an automaton and say, no, it's not going to affect me. It has to affect you, and there's something wrong with you if it doesn't. So firstly, you have to work through the stress, almost go through what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross talks about with the five stages of grief, where you've got to go through the anger, the denial, the bargaining, the depression, and then finally the acceptance. And look, it's not really the stress, mate. It's the way you handle the stress that's important. And I always tell the story about this beautiful man who I looked after. He's no longer with us because he was very old. But when he used to come and see me, and this guy had bypass surgery, which is a big deal for anyone. But he also had muscular dystrophy, which is another big deal. But he was clinically blind. And this man just never complained about anything. And he'd come in and say, oh, Dr. Walker, it's such a privilege being one of your patients. I'm thinking, oh, gee. He said, look, it's a privilege to be alive. We're just all here to serve. And I think one thing I say to people, if you go through your life with the service mentality, it's so much more important. And people who realize that all we are is just servants, we're here to serve everybody, that's so much more important than what you can get out of a situation for yourself. And so people who are volunteers, people who go out and help other people, you get so much. It's a very selfish thing to do because you get so much out of it for yourself, I can assure you.
Yeah, true. Let's talk about this vaccination before we have to let you go. Medina have come out today and said that they've got a 94.5% effective vaccination for COVID-19. Last week we heard from Pfizer they had a 90% effective COVID vaccine.
Yep.
But correct me if I'm wrong here, but these two types of vaccination are both the RNA, is that right?
That's it, yeah. And they both require pretty high-level cold storage that we spoke about last week.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is 94%, I mean, it's an old saying, 58% of statistics are made up on the spot. So so the whole point about this is what they're saying is the RNA vaccines are highly effective. It looks like the Oxford vaccine, which is using the altered adenovirus, is effective. And I interviewed a fellow on Sunday night on my show for the University of Queensland talking about their molecular clamp vaccine, which is also being shown to be highly effective. So it seems that all the vaccinations for the coronavirus appear to be very safe and appear to be highly effective. I just say bring them on and let's get that going so we can get our society back to normal as soon as possible.
So does it look like we're well down the road of finding a vaccine that can knock this on the head, or is it going to be very much like the flu vaccination?
Oh, look, no one knows. I mean, for example, if you look at all the studies of people who had coronavirus, the vast majority of people still have a robust immune response 5 or 6 months down the track, which is why I don't really understand why Boris Johnson's having to self-isolate. What I would have done with Boris Johnson is measured his antibody levels, and you would have got the results back within 24 hours, and if they were very high, let him get on with his life, because he's got a high immune response. Why should he isolate under those circumstances? Just because he's been exposed to someone who's got the coronavirus. He's not going to be infectious or contagious if he's got a high immune response to it. So what I'm saying is that if you had the virus, it seems like most people will have a robust response. Of course, we're going to hear the occasional people who got it for the second time or who didn't have antibodies after a few months. That's just their own inherent immune system. But most of us will, if we get coronavirus, have that response. And if we get vaccinated, we'll probably have that response. We're going to have to wait until next winter to find out if we're all getting vaccinated, whether the coronavirus rears its ugly head again, as it has done now in the Northern Hemisphere. But whether it's done that in the Northern Hemisphere without a vaccination. So when we have a very strong vaccination program, that's when we'll know.
The Danish government has ordered the slaughter of all farmed minks in the country.
Yeah.
Now, this is after the reported discovery of a mutant form of coronavirus in the animals.
Yep.
I thought I read somewhere where they changed their mind and they didn't slaughter all these minks, or did I dream that?
Well, maybe you're right, but the article I wrote said the Danish government had intended to kill all the 17 million minks.
That's right.
Living in Denmark.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I've got to say, I think it's an extraordinary overreaction. because it was only found, the virus was only found in 5 mink farms, and it had only infected 12 people who didn't get particularly ill with it, even though it was a mutated sort of virus. So I think it's an incredible overreaction, but I can understand so many countries are now going back into lockdown. Everyone's getting paranoid about the virus, and I understand that, but I still think slaughtering 17 million animals is a little bit over the top.
You're probably not surprised, being in the medical industry yourself, at the coming together of so many brilliant brains to put together a vaccination, of which, you know, thankfully, this has happened, and it's come out much, much quicker, or it will come out much, much quicker than what would normally happen with the discovery of a vaccination. Can you see this taking us forward in other areas of medicine, the collaboration of people for fighting cancer, maybe?
Oh, look, it's already happening. I've got to tell you, scientists all over the world are working together in their own laboratories and working international cooperation in every area. And in fact, people go, oh, I'm a bit worried about this vaccine, this is just new technology. No, it's not. It's old technology that has been modified to suit the coronavirus. So whether it's the molecular clamp technique from the University of Queensland, which was used for the Gardasil vaccine for cervical cancer, whether it was that technology or whether it's using the RNA vaccine technology or the adenovirus technology, it's been around for a long time. They've just been developing it. They've just switched it into coronavirus work.
And let's hope by this time, Christmas next year, you and I are not even talking about coronavirus because we've got a vaccine and everyone's been vaccinated.
Absolutely.
It'd be good, wouldn't it? That'd be a nice next year Christmas present. All right, Dr. Ross, I've got to let you go. We've got to go to the news, as
good
always.
On you, mate.
Mate, have a good weekend.
Yeah, same to you, and I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Thank you so much, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Dr. Ross Walker.